outdoors, coming on the airwaves, coming your way.
Hey now, we're outside indoors, beat on a buck on a snowy day.
Hey now, we're inside outdoors, baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Inside Outdoors is brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills, forests, and lakes of southern Indiana. Produced in Bloomington and brought to you live every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. Inside Outdoors features hosts Don Jordan, Buddy Bill Moser, and Rich Reardon, and gives you everything you need to know about the outdoors surrounding our local community, our state, and around our nation. With fishing, hunting, local and national outdoor news, the environment, natural resources, safety, issues in our community, and just down-home family fun, our goal is to inspire how to be a good steward of our precious natural resources. You can call into our show at 812-323-1200 and ask a question or tell us what's on your mind. So sit right back, get a cup of coffee, journey with us into the lakes and woods, and find out what our natural resources have to offer. If you miss the show, you can listen online at WFHB.org. Just go to the public affairs listing, and you'll find a podcast of our show at Inside Outdoors. This is WFHB Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 100.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org.
Good morning, everybody. By golly, it's a fine morning this morning, and this is Inside Outdoors with old Buddy Bill this morning.
Hey.
Bright and shiny.
This is Rich Reardon, and we have a guest host who has been sitting in for Don, and I'm real happy to, if you haven't heard him before, it's D. Allen Bronenberg.
Hi, thanks, guys.
Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here.
How is Don, anyway? Have you heard from him this week?
The amounts of complaints are rising, so I figure he's getting better.
Huh. Yeah,
you know, about various things.
Yes,
people going maskless, stuff like that. You know, so
yeah,
apparently he's been into
better.
Town at least once.
Yeah, he's getting better then.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what they say. If you complain more, you're probably feeling all right.
Well, it's taking him a while, and it you don't get over it overnight.
No. So
no one that I ever knew got overnight. That's for sure.
So how's it going around, everything happening okay with you guys and your gardens and everything? Is that all over with now?
My garden is pretty well done. I got to pick my last beans this week. Claire's picked some tomatoes this week, mm-hmm. and I've got a zucchini out there that survived the frost so far, and it might make it and it may not.
Yeah, so Mrs.
Other than that, that's about it.
Victoria's been working out in the garden today and said that there's only one kind of bad day coming. She said she was going to try to save as much as she could and keep it going. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, well, if you're lucky, you can get the job done. I even plowed half of my garden.
Oh, did you?
Already got it plowed, and I tried to plow the other half and save the zucchini and things, but it was so hard, I couldn't even plow with the tractor.
Yeah.
It just spun and carried on, and I just quit till it rains. But the lower part of it, it plowed real nice. But boy, that upper end where the tomatoes and everything is, it's dry.
Yeah, Victoria had to transplant some of her hydrangeas, and had to get the mattock out and dig the hole. I mean, it was hard as a rock.
I don't even know where you get into the ground with a power post hole digger or not.
I know. It'll probably just sit and spin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's just about like concrete.
It is.
It's hard. But we'll maybe get some rain one of these days.
Oh, we for sure will.
Hopefully, anyway.
Well, yeah. We're still at 537.1 and holding steady at Lake Monroe. I'm still looking for the temp. But I believe that's going to be right around 72 degrees. That's my prediction.
Well, I predicted 71, so We'll see who's closest. We'll see who's closest.
I think I got to say Monroe Lake, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
None of us old timers call it that anymore. But
it's Lake Monroe.
Never called it that.
Well, that's about like B Town.
When did they change that?
Where's B Town at?
I don't know.
I guess they're too lazy to spell Bloomington out, so they just put B Town.
It's the B-town. Texting. The texting is the problem.
Yeah.
On a text on your
phone.
I don't
live in B Town. I live in Bloomington myself.
I try not to deal with
it. Nobody spells Chapel Hill, so, you know.
Right.
Well, it's a beautiful day here today, though.
In Chapel Hill?
You were saying so, yeah.
Downtown Chapel Hill. It's gorgeous here.
Down there at the Walmart. Down there in Chapel Hill at the Walmart.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why everything's taking so long today, but it is. Monroe Lake.
Probably.
Where's mine?
Probably got tarred.
Seems like they changed this thing. Anyway.
Yeah, it's all, everything's
71.4 degrees, so it's in your favor.
Yeah, it is. Boy, by 2 degrees.
Yeah.
No, 1 degree.
Yeah, 1 degree.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was something. I got some stuff to talk about today, but I thought I'd start with, I don't know, Alan, you get on Facebook. Did you see the one about the mountain lion?
I did.
Yeah, that boy hiking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd get your attention pretty quick.
That'd get your blood rolling.
Yep.
It would. But there's an interesting controversy over that. I don't know if you guys have heard about this, but they basically, when it was first put on Facebook or YouTube or wherever it showed up, I'm sure it wasn't Facebook first, but they said, you know, that he was being stalked by this cat and you know, if you look at it, it's scary, but the cat, like, throws his hands out or his paws and claws and he kind of jumps at him and then he stops, and he did that about 4 or 5 times that I saw. Mm-hmm. And basically somebody wrote back, this is from Indigenous Landscapes, I'm not sure whether that's just their Facebook page or whoever, but anyway, they said what's actually happening is he's not stalking and trying to attack this guy. But it's actually she was escorting him away from her babies. Huh. And so in reality, she wasn't trying to necessarily attack him, although she probably would have if he had been aggressive towards her. But I guess this is a behavior, you know, that's not normal. Usually if they're going to get you for food, they're just going to pounce on you from out of a tree or something. You know what I mean? They're not necessarily going to make a big spectacle of themselves for a long time. And this went on for about 6 minutes. I'm sure it just terrified this guy.
Yeah.
But it's basically, it says that she was probably warding off the hiker from its babies. And, you know, He did a lot of the right things. He just backed away slowly. He continued to face her, and he spoke loudly and firmly. He didn't try to run away. If you try to run, and this is true with a bear and other things, and we've talked about this before, but if you turn and run, it's probably going to inspire it to go after you, and especially a mountain lion.
Have you seen anything where it shows him?
Oh yeah. Well, you mean the guy?
Yeah, it shows the lion.
I never saw him. Yeah. No.
No, you've never saw him.
No.
Now, why have we got a camera out there? Making a movie out of this, and a man hiking. When I go hiking, I don't carry a camera with me.
Well, everybody does now, Bill, with their phone, and that's what it is. He just pulled his phone out, and a lot of people do it so much that it's just second nature to pull it out and start recording.
Well, I wonder about that.
That's where he got it, I'm sure.
I'm not sure I'd have the wherewithal to punch the tiny little buttons on my phone if I had a female mountain lion running up my butt. I'm just not sure I would have handled that quite the same way.
Well, in the beginning, if you remember, he saw it way up the trail. And
right.
It was just sort of standing there in the trail, and so I think he took it out to kind of take a picture of it, and then it got worse from there.
It did get worse from there.
Yeah, it did get worse. Ain't no doubt about that.
It's a powerful little piece of video, though. I just, when that thing starts lunging at you, it's got to be just, you know, terrible on your entire nervous system.
Well, the first time I watched that and I saw the cat flare up and, you know, get its paws up in the air, I thought, this isn't going to end up well.
Right.
I was surprised it ended up as, you know, innocuous as it was, but,
right.
Yeah, when it started rearing up, I thought, this is probably not going to be good.
Yeah.
Well, it turned out all right, so yes. that's a good thing, I guess.
Well, and I think that the important point here is that, and, you know, we've talked about this with bear and stuff, especially Don talking about Yellowstone and other places that there's a lot more human population going through. You know, obviously Yellowstone has some millions, some people per, you know, season, but that they, if they're protecting their babies, sometimes they'll end up getting killed because people take it as they're being aggressive. Yeah. When in reality, she didn't attack him, and she's just basically saying, hey, go away.
Yeah, you know? Put your damn phone down and get out of here.
Exactly. So anyway, he did it the right way. He backed up, don't run, talk in a loud voice. You know, look them in the eye if they're looking you in the eye.
I ain't gonna stand still long enough to look him in the eye.
Yeah, just don't run. If you run, they're probably gonna come after you. So anyway, he was real lucky. I thought that was pretty cool.
Well, we got a true story here for you. We had a baby bobcat.
Really?
Not a baby, probably a young one. Walk right up to the double doors. Victoria and I were sitting in the living room.
Wow.
Just talking, and she had just fried some bacon that morning and set the skillet outside to cool off.
Yeah.
And we're just sitting there, and something walks right up close to it, then walks right in front of the double doors, turns around and starts walking just straight back across the yard like it came. Wasn't in a hurry, nothing. Evidently didn't like that hot grease, but it was a young bobcat.
Interesting.
It was no more than 10, 12 feet from us on the other side of the glass when it came up. And I'd never seen anything in the way of a wild cat that got, you know, that close to the house. The only thing I can think of is that they're just nothing to eat out there right now, that it's so dry.
Yeah.
You know, these animals are just coming right up close to the population.
Right.
Because they know they got garbage cans and they got things out there. But I suppose the distinctive smell of bacon grease wafting through the woods and the ravines probably was...
A little more than he could handle.
Yeah. Yeah, I just, you know, I'd heard stories of bobcats around before, and I know that there was one that was hit on the road to the dam a few years ago, and that was confirmed by, I think, the sheriff's deputy who came to pick it up off the road, but I'd never seen one in real life before.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up. Go ahead.
They're around, I mean.
Yeah,
they go through here. Of course, I don't see them, but they've got them tagged and collars on them, and they've tracked them through here several times and pretty close to the house here.
Do they get them tagged?
Yeah, they've got, and I presume they're still doing it. They got collars on them, and they got radio collars to where they can track them and tell where their path is and where they've been and where they go and
mm-hmm. yeah.
and all that. So, yeah, they still, and I presume they still do it. I don't know anymore, but they did.
I hope so. That'd be nice to know.
Yeah,
and there's getting to be quite a few of them anymore too. They're protected, and they're several around.
Well, the reason that it's interesting that you said this is that I saw something the other night. I was driving down Ketchum Road, right there by the bluffs, or before you get to the bluffs, and I would say. Right around sundown, but almost dark. And up in front of me, I thought I saw a fox because of the way it was walking. And as I got closer in my truck, I saw that it was a cat's face and not a long, you know.
Yep.
And because the cat's face obviously is flat, kind of, and the big ears and everything. And I thought, oh, wow, that's got to be a bobcat then because... It was big. It was as big as a fox and maybe almost as big as a coyote. Not quite, but it was more like 2.5 feet high, maybe 3 feet, as compared to, they're supposed to be only about 2 feet high. And I know this because I looked it up this week. But the weird thing about it is a bobcat, it has a real short tail. They don't really have a mountain lion or something. They have got that big long tail. Well, this thing had a long tail. I mean, it was long.
That was a cougar.
And it was was striped. It was like a zebra. It was like black stripe after black stripe all the way out. And I thought, well, that's not. it looks kind of like one. You know, I don't know whether they can breed together. Like maybe. A bobcat and a mountain lion got together because it wasn't as big as a mountain lion. You know, it wasn't as big as a tiger or anything, but.
Might have just been a young one.
I don't know. It had a long tail. Yeah. I've seen maybe 3 or 4 bobcats in my being in Indiana throughout the years, and they were usually a little smaller. Somebody said maybe it might have been a raccoon, but. They just walk totally different. They're, you know what I mean? It wasn't a raccoon.
Yeah.
So anyway, I've been trying to find something with a long striped tail and I can't find hardly anything that makes sense about what it was, but it was definitely a cat and it definitely had a long tail. So maybe I saw a young cougar, but they look different to me. They have a different face, you know. The bobcats are a little bit more like a regular wild cat, you know what I mean? Like a feral cat in a way, a big one. But anyway.
Well, without you know, staring at it, I just thought it was a fox.
Yeah.
We see a lot of fox around here. Mm-hmm. And when it turned around sideways and started to walk away, Victoria looked at me and she said, is that what I think it is? And I'm going, I think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't no fox.
Well, Rich, whenever you go home, if you go down 37 to four lane and you get down there to Harrisburg to where you turn off to go over to your house, that high bluff right there, as you go to turn off, you keep your eye open there around the top of that and you'll see a bobcat because there is one that hangs out there.
Huh. I'll be darned.
Now, did you know across the road from that, there's a cemetery? On that other hill?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I didn't either. When I worked for the state highway, that's when we found it.
Huh. So that you mean towards Lake Monroe?
Yes.
Yeah.
Across from that big bluff there where you turn off across the road.
Right. Well.
So anyway, but there is a bobcat that hangs around there because I've seen it.
Well, the one thing about a bobcat is it on the ears it has this little. Sort of tuft of hair that sticks up they're very you can tell it's a different from a cat or whereas the mountain lions have a little more of a rounded, you know, ear and different face, but
Well, just don't take it home for a pet.
I won't be. No.
Well, they're getting close enough anymore. They could be pets.
Well, that's that's true. That's
They're.
Yeah, you're right there.
Well, it's funny that the other thing that you'll see is they're spotted, or they have a lot of stripes or things like that on them, whereas the mountain lion is more of a just a tan coat, or you know, of course we've talked about the panther and the black ones that we've supposedly seen around here. Haven't heard much about it that lately. I think it was last year or so somebody had a picture of a black one. Didn't that happen up in Morgan Monroe or something, Bill?
What was it?
A mountain lion. Or a panther or whatever. Cougar, they call them.
Wasn't that over in Owen County?
I think it was. It wasn't that far away.
No, it wasn't very far. It was over in Owen County, I think.
Yeah.
The DNR got pictures of that. Right. So that's a proven fact.
I don't know if that was a trail cam or somebody actually, it probably was. But.
I don't remember exactly how, you remember how they got them pictures?
Probably a trail cam.
Claire said it was the night cameras, trail cams.
I'd like to get one of those and put it in my backyard and see what's walking through there all night.
I'm going to have to get one because I got a groundhog and I can't catch him.
Oh, man.
So I'm gonna have to get one just to see where he's at and what time he's moving.
Yeah, he'll tear everything up if you don't.
Oh, they've just tore my concrete floors. They've just tore them all to pieces.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
they've tore them all to pieces.
Boy.
Well, I tell you, we had a lot going on this week.
We did?
Yeah, I don't know. No, Alan, I don't know if I actually ever got it to you last night.
You did.
Okay, good.
I saw it, yeah. Shocking.
Well, I'm going to pull this up. I went to a meeting yesterday with our commissioners, they were talking about this Huff problem or issue. The county sued them, as you've probably know, and we hadn't heard much about it. So when I found out that there was a meeting, it was open to the public on Zoom. So just like we're doing right now, I came in, and it was a little weird because I asked them, you can send a private message to whoever's moderating the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And she was putting up this mess or on the, where you share a screen and you can see, you know, whatever that person wants you to see. This list of things that had just happened with the lawsuit, and I kept asking them, can I get a copy of it? Can you just send me a copy? You know, it's just a Word document, you know. And they just ignored me through the whole thing, never said anything about it, nothing happened. So I started taking screenshots of every time she'd move the, you know, go up and down on the page. So it took me about, I don't know, 10 of them, but I finally got most of it. The only thing I missed was a little bit in number 4. So anyway, that's just how it happened. But I will start reading some of this before we can discuss it. But apparently this is sort of the end of the lawsuit and what
this
happened.
Is the resolution.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the end. This is how this turned out.
Right. Number one is no further enforcement action on past logging activities. Some of this is really kind of hard to read and understand. When I went into this meeting, I got in there just a little bit late, so I don't know if they gave some overview in the beginning or something, but I wasn't that late. And I didn't understand a word that they were saying through the whole thing. I mean, honest to God, I was like, they were talking and talking and talking. It was like it just wasn't registering what they were talking about. Which is, you know, kind of like I've been getting used to politicians talking that way lately.
Yeah.
I was going to say, what do you expect?
Yeah.
But it's just they might as well be talking Greek or something, you know? It's like,
that's politics at its best.
I don't know what you're talking about. But anyway, so no more further action is going to happen on past logging. Now, what past logging means, I'm guessing means from the date before this came down. This was 10/13, so yesterday. county MS4 coordinator and an engineer chosen by the Huffs will jointly assess the current state of erosion control on the Huff property relating to the Huffs' activities. If no instances of non-compliance are found, no further action required. If instances of non-compliance are found, the MS4 coordinator and the engineer will agree, and I'm guessing engineer means Corps of Engineers?
No, maybe it's just any engineer they want to hire. The site engineer they're talking about.
Right.
Will agree to a remedy, which will be implemented by the Huffs. And if the coordinator and the engineer are unable to agree to a remedy, then the Huffs will work with the assistant planning director to resolve the dispute. If the Huffs and the assistant directors cannot agree, the matter will be subject to mediation. That's sort of what I'm talking about. Like, some of it's legalese and you don't really know, well, what does mediation mean now after that? But, you know, it sounds like they've got like sort of a 4-step plan to finding out whether there's some problems there or they're not complying with the erosion control.
What it means is that they don't want to drag it back through court again. So the mediation, the judge is saying, the overviewer is saying, look, we're tired of messing with this. Get this out of the courts. You guys get your heads together and fix this.
So would that be the assistant director, or would it be the judge of this whole?
Well, they pointed out that it would be the assistant director for this one. So, yeah. But before that, keep in mind, I mean, the county coordinator and the Huffs engineer are allowed to come up with a plan that they can both agree on. So, I mean, there's a lot of leeway between, I mean, that. It seems pretty clear they don't want this in the courts anymore.
Well, yeah, it becomes a little more obvious the county later we go in this.
Yeah, neither the county or the Huffs probably.
Yeah. So, number three, the planning director will perform delegated duties relating to the Huff property. The assistant director will perform all duties that may be delegated. Number four, Huffs will produce a map of the urban area that complies with IC36, blah, blah, blah. Subject two, and that's where I couldn't get the end of that sentence, but I'm guessing that basically they're asking them to show exactly what the urban area is, or which would be the... Aren't they selling properties there, or is this all just one property? I know there's a few houses.
It was
there.
One property that originally was. I had talked with some of the neighbors there, and they knew that there was originally going to be, and I can't remember if it was 4 or 6 houses built on there.
Right.
It was one of the things that the neighbors were bothered by is that the Huffs weren't very forthcoming on were those 4 family houses.
Right.
I mean, were they separate? Were they going to be sold? As far as I know, no one knows the answer to that to this point. The Huffs have never disclosed whether they were going to sell that or whether those were going to be for his 3 kids or whatever.
If you look on Friends of Lake Monroe on Facebook, they posted a aerial view of it. Matter of fact, there's a before and after shot as well, where you can see where the trees that got to cut down and that sort of thing.
Right.
But it kind of looks like these little cul-de-sac roads that are in there. I mean, I'd have to look at it again, but just from my memory. And so you wonder whether there's going to be more urban area there than it implies right now. And apparently they have to produce a map. So,
right. Well, that's what that urban area means, was the amount of houses that were approved for that geography.
Right.
And that was pre-known by everybody from the day he bought it till through all this. The neighbors had expected there to be, I think it was, might have even been 6 houses that were approved for that, 200 acres he's got there or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So everybody knew that going into this, that there was going to be at least that many houses there. That was pre-prescribed by this, quote, urban zone. That's what that meant.
So basically, this first half of this final document is saying basically they need to comply, clean up, come up with an idea of how they're going to make sure there's no erosion, that's going to be agreeable to the engineer and the coordinator. and the planning director. And then, so that's, you know, of the whole lawsuit, that's pretty much the answer of what they have to do. The next half is about the county. So I think this is kind of interesting, too. Number five, the county will not engage in any extraordinary communication with state or federal agencies regarding the Huff property. This does not apply to communications made in normal course of performing duties required by statute or ordinance. The county will not advocate against the issuance of permits by IDEM, DNR, or the Army Corps of Engineers in respect to the Huff property. At the conclusion of the process described in above, the county will issue a press release that states, the county has reached an agreement with the Huffs to resolve the lawsuit. The county has determined that the site is in compliance with all county erosion and control requirements and does not pose a threat to the Mount Monroe County water supply. The county, number eight, the county will dismiss its action against the Huffs. Number nine, the Huffs will dismiss their counterclaim against the county. 10, the parties agree that any disputes arising from the application or enforcement of this settlement agreement or the underlying facts will be resolved by mediation. So again, not in the courts. 11, the county and the county's insurance provider will pay a total of $50,000 to settle the Huff's counterclaim. 12, parties will execute mutual general releases, which will include all claims against the Huffs and all claims against Monroe County, its officials, agents, and employees. The release will not include any admissions of liability by either party. So there you go. The Huffs seem to have kind of won the whole thing. Although there are certain things that they've talked about that they have to agree with.
Yeah, I just have to say I probably need to have that lawyer's cell phone number. He really, surprisingly, the Huffs seem to have had their feathers wired pretty tight when they started to do this. And, you know, from the beginning, I think that was what was, even some of the neighbors in talking with them,
mm-hmm.
Seem to have agreed that most of what was going on there was what they had expected. It was what they didn't know that was bothering them, and that, and the burning of the lump of the wood there that was, you know, causing so much smoke, the damage to the road, all of those things. You know, my guess is if the Huffs could have been just a little bit more forthcoming, they probably could have even avoided this, but, they certainly seem to have prevailed, you know, right down the lines of what the law seems to be.
Well, and I don't know whether there's more to this document, whether there's more than 12 statements, but in other words, there could be more to it, and they were going to reconvene and talk some more about this. But
who was there for the Huffs, Rich? Was there a lawyer there? Was there anybody there for them? Or was this just the county reading the results?
Pretty much the county, because Everybody I see here, there were people like Katz was here, you know.
Yeah.
But there was a couple of journalistic type people, including me, and then a lot of, you know, like Julie Thomas and Lee Jones, Dave Warren, Larry Wilson, Dave mm-hmm. Schilling. You know, people that are on the in the, you know, community. So anyway, but the interesting thing to me is I didn't really, all the things that we've talked about, I didn't really hear any mention of, like that burning. I suppose you burn illegally, it's over with, you know. They can do something about it while you're doing it, but apparently there's nothing long term. Also, I remember we talked a lot about the fact that they didn't have certain permits and things, and that's partially why the county sued them.
Right.
And I don't see any real mention of permits other than it says to the county, you will not advocate against the issuance of permits. Like they can't stop the IDEM or the DNR or the Army Corps from doing, you know, from issuing them new permits. Which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, because neither of those agencies are in charge with issuing any permits that I'm aware of.
Not that I know of.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what that would be.
And they list those three, so I'm not sure that means all issuance of permits, like by the state of Indiana or whatever, but apparently they don't want the county involved with pressuring them at all anymore,
right.
And including a $50,000 settlement. I'm guessing that's probably to pay some lawyer fees and stuff, but you would have thought that it would be different. I was kind of surprised that the $50,000 settlement involved too.
Well, from the beginning, the reports that were attributed to the Huffs and their attorneys had said that the county did not have the authorization to override the state logging statutes. And evidently that's true.
Yep.
So, there's certainly a lot of good and bad in this whole thing. I think the good thing is, and we didn't hear it either. I'd seen this a couple of times on Facebook, maybe even once from the Friends of Lake Monroe folks. But the water around his property had been tested on a number of occasions and was shown to have no more siltation than anything else around it. So whatever they're doing now, however unsightly it is, isn't producing any siltation or erosion that I'm aware of. And the tests that I've seen run all show that, you know, nothing bad is happening to the water quality because of what he's done to date.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the good news. You know, I think that the bad news is that there really is a component of bad neighborliness when there wasn't a lot of transparency on his part in dealing with the neighbors, according to those people.
Right.
I haven't heard his side of it, but if you ask the people, and they've mentioned on my little Lake Monroe community Facebook site a couple of times, there were a couple of neighbors that said, you know, that he just wasn't forthcoming about any of the things that they asked him about. And, you know, I think that's a bad way to go about being anybody's neighbor.
Yeah, I don't know whether to defend him or to be angry at him, honestly, because on another level, and I'm sure Bill would agree with this, you got to be so careful about what you say if you're expecting a lawsuit.
Yep.
And so in that regard, maybe he was being smart, you know, the Huffs, to not say much about anything. But there were certainly, there were things that people were complaining about, like the endless trucks going through there, right, Bill?
Yeah.
By your house?
Right.
And noise and, you know, danger of, you know, when you have a lot of logging trucks going by your little neighborhood, it can be bad for your doggy or, you know, for a kid or all kinds of reasons, but...
Well, that's right, Bill. They would have went by your place on the way out, wouldn't they?
Oh, they were load of logs after load of logs.
Yeah.
Stone trucks, same way. Triaxle stone trucks going in.
Yeah.
Log trucks coming out. That went on for a long time.
Yeah.
I don't know how long, but.
Well, would you consider, I mean, you're not really a complainer and you're a little more out of the way than some of those, but you know how you go through those little neighborhoods back in there before you get mm-hmm. down to the end of the road where he is, where that is. They were definitely doing some complaining. And then, of course, there was the smoke and other things happening. But
yeah,
I agree that in that regard, I think. But, you know, it's the way things are nowadays. Like, well, progress, yeah. We're taking the trees out. They got to go somewhere, yeah. You know. But.
Well, it's a shame it happened, but it started way back there and never was enforced. And they've let everybody get by with stuff. And health department, planning commission, the whole bunch. And like I said, that happened years ago, started years ago, and this is what it ended up, and it's going to get worse, and it's not going to get any better.
Well, I mean,
plan on it getting worse.
I think that's another important point in that I was always aware, you know, this is sort of what I was told when I first started learning about the lake back in the 70s, is that, the Corps of Engineers is keeping a certain distance, so it's always going to look the same. You're not going to have just homes along the shore, that kind of thing. And of course, next thing you know, you had Johnny Cougar living there, and you just had a picture of his place out on Facebook. It's pretty hidden. They did a good job of kind of disguising it there, but I don't know how he got around that ordinance. He seems awfully close to the lake. He's like, you can just walk from his front porch down to the lake.
Well, in the back of that house is kind of dug right into the hillside there.
Right.
There would have had to have been an exemption for slope restriction.
Yeah.
Where he built right there. I just would have had to. In fact, at one point when he was building that, I think you might remember that they had a water slide and it went in the house and ruined a bunch of the construction when they were in the new phases of it, because they didn't divert the water correctly when they were building it in there.
Yeah. Well, then through the years, I've seen other places kind of on your side of the lake, Bill, but there's a few. I don't go out there often enough that I can't remember, but I remember going out and seeing some developments that weren't too far from the lake. As a matter of fact, you could see the lake from it. I'm not really sure. You guys probably know the name of it better than me, but it seems like it's sort of south of Paintown a ways. I don't know how you get to it or what road you'd go to. But
yeah, Rush Ridge up there.
Rush Ridge?
One of them. Yeah, where IU owned that ground to start with.
Yeah,
they bought that ground. And they had a meeting hall, or I guess you'd call it back there. I don't even remember now what all it was used for. But
interesting.
And then they got rid of it, and then you got all kinds of houses back there now.
Yeah.
Right. So it just seems like it's getting closer and closer to the day that they're going to want to use that land, you know?
Well, they're going to use it. And the thing of it is, back I'm going way back to the start of the lake, the Corps of Engineers said there'd be no houses built on Lake Monroe. And in that time span, way back when that started, they helped that pretty true. I was commissioner in 64 to 68, and when the lake first come in fact, it hadn't come in yet when I started. And then after that, like I said, it goes way back, and the commissioners then after that relieved a lot of that restrictions and stuff, and this is what you've got.
Right.
Well, let me tell you how that happened, Bill. I actually know a little bit about that.
Good.
I'm living on B. Prince's old land, and Ed Applegate was the attorney back then for all the stuff that's going on around the lake.
Right.
And B. Prince, it was B. Prince et al., was the lawsuit. So the guy, old B. Prince, who owned my property up here at 700 feet above the lake, sued the federal government for condemning his property, because the basis of condemning all of the property around the lake at the time was flood. So that was the basis they used for condemning all the property. Well, B pointed out that if his land was underwater, all of Bloomington would be underwater. So the basis of that taking was disallowed by the federal courts, and that was the legislation, or excuse me, the court case that undid what the Corps of Engineers had originally set out to do by condemning all the land around it for flood purposes, because the lake was built for flood purposes.
Right.
So after B. Prince won his federal case, then there were a number of people who started filing similar, cases, and they just dismissed them all and said, well, you know, we'll go back and we'll refigure this for the people who might reasonably, and I don't remember if they used a 100-year flood or a 500-year flood or what they did, but that's why there's any land at all around Lake Monroe, because you're right. The Army Corps engineers had set it out exactly to be no houses around it, but that got tripped up because of, you know, how they approached it.
Right.
Yeah, I have wondered, because I've taken rides when you go around the dam and keep going down and then over towards Hardin Ridge, you go through a lot of neighborhoods in there that don't look all that new. Again, I don't know the history probably as well as you guys. I mean, you live kind of there, but those are all pretty old. They're obviously younger than Lake Monroe, but they're still, you know, 40 and 50 year old houses in there.
Yeah.
So was that, is that like a separate town or what was that originally? Seems like that area is more old than everything else on this side. Seems fairly new or done in the last 20 years or so.
What are you talking about, Rich?
The road that comes around that ends up in Hardin Ridge. It goes around the southern end of the lake. So
Chapel Hill Road.
Yeah. Okay. That's old Chapel Hill.
Right. Was that a pre-existing town in there?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's why it's still pretty darn close. To the lake.
And if you look at the deeds, when I look at my deed, the land on the front of the shoreline where the fee take line is, I think they paid 50 cents an acre for that because it was just a side of a hill. It wasn't worth anything. Well, now, of course, it's the most valuable piece of the property because the lake's there. But the flat land back behind me here, I forget how many acres was in there, 78.78 acres on the original property that I bought, and about 40 of it is flat land.
Right.
Well, that's how old B. Prince was making his living.
Right.
So they had to pay him $28,000 for that instead of 50 cents an acre, because that's how old B. was making his living, off of that flat ground back there. He's farming it. He had some cows on it and chickens, and that's how B. made a living. So when he originally sold that to somebody other than the Corps engineers, that they paid him the most amount of money for that, and now that's the least valuable of all of them.
Right.
But the stuff that was along the shoreline, a lot of that was bought by some folks who had some friends at the Army Corps engineers and with the government. The people that I actually bought the B's property from was a group of people who owned Circle City Electronics during World War II. And of course they had government contracts and they knew where they had reservoir property all over the United States because they knew where all these reservoirs were being put in, and they went around and bought all the property up that was going to face these reservoirs.
Yeah.
And they bought it for peanuts. I mean, they literally bought it for 50 cents an acre and did really, really well.
Right.
Well, Chapel Hill, the old saying is, if you went down there and bought 50 acres of ground, they'd throw in 50 to get rid of it.
Yeah.
There you go.
And that's just about now. You go down there and you buy 50 acres, you better have it surveyed three times because you only come up with 25.
Yeah, exactly. And about 20 grandkids who say, no, that's grandpa's ground and it's mine.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, the funny thing is, if you go down certain roads like Paintown Road or even Stip Road, like we've been talking about with the car top down there, you'll find houses nestled along going down to the lake, back in there a little ways, that are fairly close, but still they're not on the shoreline, except for, like you say, when you get down to Shadyside Drive and all that, there seems to be houses that kind of run all along that ridge, like right by the lake. And that must be what you're talking about, Bill, right? That was where the IU owned it? Is that Shadyside?
No, IU didn't own that. IU owns the piece down Shields Ridge there to the lake.
Right.
From Paintown Road to the Morse Creek Ramp. on the what'd be east side, I guess it'd be, or left hand side going down.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The IU owns that all behind them houses. Now most of them houses was all in there before the lake.
Really, you mean going down Shady Side?
Let's see. No, now them houses was built. Most of them, there was some there. The old farmhouse was there. The old Eads house was there. Some of them were already there.
Yeah.
Some of them are new.
Yeah.
Now the ones all the way back in the back, that's all new.
Yeah, I just wonder how they you know, they finally got in there, because that, you know, again, that must be friends and money being spent, but I don't know how the heck that happened. That's about the only real place on the lake where it sits there overlooking the lake, as far as I can tell.
Well,
other than
part of that down there on the end, Shields owned that.
Mm-hmm.
That lived, and they lived in the lake down in below that, below the house, in the lake. And
yeah.
When they sold that, they got to keep that ground up there.
Uh-huh.
And then they built a house, and the kids built a house up
right
there to get out of the lake, because the Corps was taking all of it.
Right.
And then in the meantime, they've sold it to different people, and I don't know who owns it now. But,
yeah.
Interesting.
Well, and the foundation owned that property down there, just across the causeway from Mellencamp there, back all that old...
Rush Ridge.
Rush Ridge, yeah, that camp back in there.
Uh-huh.
That's, you know, there's some big houses back there. But, you know, Rich, a lot of people donated land to the foundation who, you know, bought land out here before the lake was built or right afterwards and
right
bought it cheap. And it it raised in price. And if they hadn't done anything with it, it was a lot like the old Doc Shiner, the chemistry professor at IU. It's like 46 acres right here, right on the lake, right next to me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he'd had it for sale a couple times and never would really sell it. I tried to buy it off of him once or twice. And after he left, he donated it to the foundation for the tax write-off. And
right,
I think, you know, he was going to get about as much out of donating it as he was selling it.
Right.
So I think that's happened a lot around, you see places that, you know, why would IU have that? Well, probably because somebody donated it to him.
Yes.
It's the same thing down there. You know, the foundation ended up with that piece down there. You know, just as you come off a Strain Ridge before you get to the dam.
Right.
I don't remember who owned that, but the foundation ended up with it, and then I think they sold it off in pieces after that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who owned that.
Yeah, I don't remember either, but the foundation ended up with it. In fact, it's interesting, that piece of property was up for a zoning appeal to get the road back to one of those lots back there that had been sold. The road had to be cut on a slope bigger than 12%, which is almost everywhere around the lake, of course.
Yeah.
And it was up for zoning appeal because that road wasn't going to make the code.
Yeah.
Let's see. Harold Stewart owned some there.
Yeah, he did.
In front there, I think.
Yeah. Now, I think Bill Belcher owned
there.
Billy owned that piece of it there along the, before you get to the was it the Four Winds? Not the Four Winds, the Point.
The Point, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a nice piece of land there. They got horses on that now, so.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can't see too much that's going to be in the future a problem. Seems like the Huff's kind of almost got the end of what I can imagine getting developed. If you look around the whole lake. But anyway, that seems to be fairly resolved. I guess we'll have to just watch and see what some of the results are of the studies that they're going to do and stuff. So there'll be still more you'll hear from us, but for now, that's what they've come up with.
Oh, I think there's going to be some eyes on it. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there definitely will be, and I don't think, really, to be honest, I don't think you can do anything about it.
Yeah.
No, not
I think,
really.
I think he's got her won, and
yep.
They've back, and it goes back, and I still say it goes back to where they've let the cat out of the bag, and more to say, and you know, they've released a lot of stuff that they shouldn't, and over time it just keeps getting a little worse and a little worse and a little worse and a little worse, and it's too bad, but that's the way it is. Yep. And then you know, that if they go ahead, if he goes ahead and does what he says he's going to do, and keeps it from washing and grass, and puts it in grass, is there any grass growing on there, Alan?
There is. Yeah, it's he did seed it with grass because it in the summer it went from brown in the spring to green. So yeah, there's uh-huh. there's grass growing on it. Yeah.
As long as he keeps it sodded down good, you know, it's yeah. it's. He's going to get what he wants, and the people's going to get what they want because they don't want no filtration into the water.
Right.
So over time, it will he'll come out ahead. I mean, you know, yeah. And stuff. But I don't know. It's a mess, and it's too bad. But that's the way it is. And to me, that's not quite, it's bad. No, don't get me wrong, it's bad, but it's not any worse. I think them houseboats dumping their
absolutely
toilet stools into the water is a whole lot worse than his filtration of soil into the water.
Yeah.
Because at least it's clean, and then you know what's coming out of a toilet stool in a houseboat.
Yeah.
Hey guys, well, I gotta just make you be concise. We got about a minute and a half left, so.
Yeah, no, but buddy, you're so right. And you know, keep in mind that if there's dirt coming off of his land, trust me, it's coming off of everybody's land all the way around this lake. So,
absolutely.
But the toilets are a whole different issue, and I can tell you, every Sunday evening at 6 o'clock. There's a line of boats heading over to Catfish Cove just to my left down here. They uh-huh. stay for a few minutes and turn around and head right back to the ramp. And I can tell you that's what they're doing.
Sure, yeah. Sure, I mean, that's what they're doing.
Yeah, and there's it looks like a parade
yeah.
of
nobody
boats heading down to that cove. That's what. Well, there's so many catfish down there too.
Yeah, I don't want to eat too many of them either.
No. Hey, me neither.
I got to cut you off. We're halfway through the music. I want to thank Alan and Bill for being here on Zoom again. And anything else you guys want to say, say it now, because we got to go.
We got to go. So
have
see
a great
you,
week.
Alan. Take care.
See you, Bill.
And everybody have a good week and enjoy it. And fall's coming. Just hold on. So we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Inside Outdoors comes to you from the beautiful rolling hills and green forests of southern Indiana. Thanks for listening. Inside Outdoors is brought to you each week on Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. If you happen to miss the show, you can listen online at wfhb.org. Just go to the public affairs listing and you'll find a podcast of our show.